Well, you're not Korean, so how did you end up in Korea?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not Korean. I'm actually half Irish.
All right. Hey, they.
My full name is Kelly Frances McKenna. Just
Okay.
most people in Korean on Korean ID, they tend to Korean names are typically 3 characters long, so they get as far as Kelly Frances M. So I just
Ah.
started sort of adopting Francis as my surname, but I'm actually a McKenna. And no, I'm not Korean. I came to Korea in 2000. It was completely by accident and very experimental. And I've worked in Asia for 10 years in different countries, but primarily in South Korea. And Seoul is kind of the city that I fell in love with.
Okay, I mean, I saw a lot of pictures, so you're an actress.
Well, technically, I'm a performance artist. I also do contractual PR, and I've worked with the government on tourism matters before. I co-own a website called soulstyle.com that aims to educate people looking to visit Korea and understand Korean culture, showcase local community talent, basically like an urban Bible. I also, as you know, I founded Bare Necessity Korea, which is my own personal passion, not a job. I'm also a student at Seogang University for Korean language.
All right.
So,
And
hey, I graduated
how
from
difficult is it, when you sort of work with the government and officially, obviously it's supporting tourism, and here you are saying, look, there's bear bile farming going on in Korea, which apparently is not great for the tourists or for tourism. Any problems
well,
there?
to be honest with you, the capacity in which I've worked with the government has been very specific. It's been a non-issue. It's been on for specific projects or as a contributor. I contributed to Korea Magazine. I was part of the team that worked toward rebranding Seoul for 2010. We wanted to change our city slogan, and I was simply contacted as part of a team. I keep in touch with quite a few people. It's a small expat community here. I've been here a long time and I've met a lot of people. So often when I work for them, it's for a very isolated, specific reason. But when I went on KBS on the Seoul Report, it was an awkward situation specifically for that reason, because here it is government-sponsored radio and I'm talking about the ways in which I feel the government has made mistakes. And so it was a bit of an irony there. It doesn't really come up in tourism because people in Korea don't see that as affecting tourists. And in fact, most Koreans just don't have it on their radar. One of my biggest challenges is educating Koreans about this extremely serious issue in their own country because they literally do not know about it. And when they find out about it, they're often shocked. So it doesn't make news. I've gotten it in English media, but Hangul media remains a challenge. And they don't see it as a threat to tourism in the least. Although we do have tourism issues with Southeast Asia, particularly, namely Vietnam, in recent times. And that would be on a black market level. Tours where people go over, visit bearbal farms, collect product, bring contraband back into Korea, and then often have no idea that they're breaking the law. Now, recently, Customs has taken measures to prevent this, and you can see warnings and a little slip at the airport. Asiana, in particular, they implemented a little carriage bag campaign that says, did you collect any of the following? But generally speaking, the average Korean doesn't know a whole lot about it.
We were fortunate
So.
enough to do a few interviews with Animals Asia, with Dave Neal in particular, obviously about the bear bile farms in China. So obviously it's not an issue that is only in China, so it's in Korea as well. I've been
Oh, yes.
onto your website, obviously, Bear Necessities Korea, and it says there's only 19 bears left in the wild, which is not
That's
so
right.
much the issue. Even though it is obviously troublesome enough, it's more the issue that 1,600 more bears are living in bile sort of farms or
The
on
last
farms.
official number was 1,474, but we estimate about 1,600, yes. And that is our big problem. What to do with these bears? Who pays for it? The farmers also have an issue because they demand compensation. You know, the government initiated this trade. It was marketed to them as lucrative. Then very shortly afterwards, if you follow the timeline, quite a few number laws were implemented to make this trade no longer lucrative. There was international pressure, and pretty soon those farmers found themselves in hot water. Now they are demanding compensation, and the numbers that they are asking are pretty astronomical. And then there's the problem of what happened to these bears. A lot of them are sick. As you would know if you'd ever visited one of Jill's sanctuaries, they require a great deal of care, psychologically and physically. They basically need to be rehabilitated, and those are the lucky ones, because quite a few simply cannot live.
Mm.
So it's a big problem, and it's now being addressed. Green Korea and WISPA, which is the World Society for the Protection of Animals, recently had a very successful exhibition, which you can read about on my website. All of the stories courtesy of Gina Moon of moonbears.org, with whom I work, although she kind of specializes in the Korean language audience, whereas I've got more of an international network. And, you know, it's starting to be talked about, but it's a really serious problem, and I don't see us having a lot of time to fix it.
Mm.
Although I'm more concerned about, I'm equally concerned about the population in the wild, because I feel like one danger that exists is if we were to build a sanctuary, people might start to see this species as fine. And that's just not the case. This point was actually raised to me by Dave Garcellis. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Mr. Garcellis his work. With the ICUN, I always get this acronym mixed up, ICUN, the threatened and endangered species list. I believe it's ICUN. Dave Garcellis, he resides in the United States and does quite a bit of research in Jirasan, but he's basically regarded as the leading authority in this particular matter. And he had reminded me, you know, Kelly, you're only fixing part of the problem, or a lot of you activists, you animal welfare people, are focusing on saving the animals that are suffering, putting them in a sanctuary, but neglecting the larger problem, and that, or one of the larger problems, in that this species is going to disappear from the planet. And they're not alive and well just because they're put in lovely cages. We need to pay attention to the fact that the environment is killing these animals.
Yeah.
Because the environment really is disappearing here in developing countries like Korea. We are losing our forests, and that's a really big deal. So that's something that I would like people to remember while we concentrate on the pain and suffering of those 1,600 on the farms.
I think it's also, you know, a bit unfair to really throw it back to activists. Obviously, welfare always sort of means, you know, giving bigger cages. At least you people care. I personally, you know, obviously I'm more for animal rights as such, and so in a sense, when you talk to people about the bile, they have, you know, a lot of people think, you know, why is it actually extracted? A lot of people still don't know what's going on, because when you look at bears, people look at brown bears, because that's what they see on Nat Geo Wild. It's very little knowledge.
Well, yeah, not a lot of people don't know what a moon bear is,
exactly.
Or an Asiatic bear.
So maybe if you can enlighten the people, why is bear or bile farming still going on? Apparently, it's used in traditional medicine. Now there's obviously talk that it's actually harmful. So can you enlighten us a bit why it is farmed?
It's farmed for UDCA. Urso deoxycholic acid, or UDCA, because most people don't want to even try to pronounce that. But the truth is, the chemical itself does have merits. It's just that it can be safely and easily synthesized in a lab. And people, I'm finding, a lot of people have this obsession with authenticity. They want to know that their chemicals are coming from an animal, not a lab, but it actually does have medicinal properties. No one has ever argued that. It's just there are quite a few herbal alternatives. And by the time that product gets to the consumer, there's a very good chance that it is dangerous and it can kill people, because the conditions that the bears are kept under are atrocious.
Okay,
we're talking the worst imaginable.
But the people who don't know anything about it, what is it used for?
It's used for a lot of things. Parkinson's, heart disease, stomach disease, ailments of the liver, hemorrhoids, something that people call revival pills, which is a fancy way of saying, you know, general libido well-being, plasters for sprains. It was basically touted as a cure for all ills, but it most certainly has medicinal properties. It's just unnecessary from a medicinal point of view. And recently there was a letter that was published by ACOM, which was kind of a big deal because that is one of our giants for traditional herbal medicine. ACOM and KAH, or the Korean Association of Herbalists. And I had taken on a company, well, ACOM endorsed a KAH report, basically thanking Green Korea United for posting the alternatives and acknowledging that while bear bile does in fact have medicinal properties, we've reached a point where it's not necessary and they hope that it can be stopped.
Hmm.
They expressed a desire to have it stopped.
The interesting thing is also, you know, when you read about it sort of on different websites, that apparently this medicine, if you know, for want of a better word, can be synthesized since the 1960s.
Yeah, it's easily and safely synthesized. And it's marketed, Ursidiol is one of the brand names. You can find it in Europe and North America. I've never seen it here, which is a shame because there you have it. It's just not it's not something that we need. It's not, I mean, it would be a really interesting ethical dilemma if this were, let's say, a cure for AIDS and the only cure for AIDS or for a specific type of cancer and it involved the killing and the suffering of an animal, but it's not the case here. We have a large number of alternatives that all come from herbs and we can create it in labs, so we don't need it.
Yeah.
But we can
but it's still going on, so obviously then you know, you have to go back to it might be lucrative, otherwise people wouldn't do it. But at the same token, when obviously farmers ask for compensation, it becomes a Korean problem then. Because obviously the international community, are they listening at all?
I'm sorry, are they listening at all? Well, I mean, I wasn't at the National Assembly meeting where it was discussed, but the compensation that they're asking for is huge. Mm. I mean, we're not talking, I guess it depends who you ask, but I find it terribly unreasonable. I guess they'd be talking about 20 to 30 billion won or $20 to $30 million, about 18 million won or maybe, see, 17 point. $1 million is about $1,000 US.
Okay, so is it that they're basically trying to milk?
They want the government to buy back the bears, yeah. And then the dilemma after that, assuming that anyone had that astronomical sum, would be what to do with these animals now, because we don't have the infrastructure to deal with that. We don't have the expertise, and that could be brought in. Who pays for that? So it's really a very complicated issue that a lot of people don't know about. But as far as tourism goes, other than Koreans going to Vietnam and inadvertently breaking laws, I've not seen it come into the picture in regard to people visiting Korea. Not once. I mean, this is not the only country that has horrendous violations of animal welfare going on.
Absolutely,
certainly.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a new thing. I mean, I've visited plenty of zoos that are horrendous, and not just here. It happens all the time. But, yeah, this doesn't come up in tourism much.
Because the question, obviously, is if it's little known, people don't do much about it. So from that point of view, the international community, what is it people really should be doing? I mean, apart from obviously raising awareness, like you said, it's a very complex thing. Is there anything the Europeans, for instance, or even, you know, the international community by and large, can really do to make this stop? Is it a good idea to even think of compensating farmers? Is there a way around it?
Their predicament is regrettable. There are different viewpoints on it. Some would take the opinion that they chose to enter into the trade in the first place, and that's the nature of business. That's one opinion. Others would say, yeah, they're in a bind. It would be my personal opinion would be a solution that retrains them to be of use to be implemented into solving the problem. There are a few people, WISP in particular, is interested in assisting the government in finding different options that they can evaluate, and they're very good. They're a fabulous group that consults plenty of experts. People like Dave, like Jill, look at what they've done, what they think. But yeah, it's hard to satisfy everyone. Are they to blame? Should they be left high and dry? Should they be paid? It's a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not. I guess you have to, it depends on who you're asking, really. And as far as preventing it, if you look at the dog meat scandal and the international pressure that was generated and what that accomplished, you can meet my cat in the background. She's
yeah, I
very
can see curious. It there.
I guess my personal opinion is that this change has to come from within Korea, and that's been one of my challenges, getting Korean people to take an interest and to really step forward and tell their own government, we don't want this to happen anymore. But unfortunately, when I look at our petitions, a lot of the pressure tends to come from the international community. I would love it if Koreans would say, you know, this is our mythological mother. This is wrong. Like, let's stop. Let's protect this endangered species. Let's fix it. But it's not happening at the moment.
Yeah, because
so
you were saying there, right in the beginning of the interview, that obviously a lot of Koreans don't know that this is going on.
No, they're certainly not these hard-hearted, cold people that quite often are shocked. I mean, one of the things that we do is we survey people. A lot of people have no idea that it's going on. And there are human beings like everyone else that would say, my God, that's terrible.
Exactly. You know, so, but when once they become aware, what can they do?
They can put pressure on the government. They can write to the president, to the minister of the environment. They can sign petitions. They can join groups like Green Korea United or mine. They can basically use their voice and their constituents of districts. Of course, they can write to their representatives. That's what they can do. And they can boycott the product. And that way, the
exactly.
trade becomes useful.
Because I think it's important to say that, because sometimes, you know, when people say, there's not much I can do, that's usually not true.
Well, they can stop using the products because there's a reason that they exist. People buy them. A lot of people don't know that they're sitting in their bathrooms. They don't know what's, like, for example, I recently took on an intern. Lovely girl. She'd just gotten back from Australia. She joined my group. We walked into her bathroom, and her mom had tonic from China that contained UCDA and or UDCA, and she just had no idea. I mean, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
She said, good for health. Yeah, I go on vacation and buy health products. No idea. I mean, if people were to see a bear bowel farm and to have any idea, I'm sure they would be horrified. They wouldn't want to touch it.
Well, you know, that the thing, obviously, is that you know, people use the same argument, or I use the same argument for, as a matter of fact, for asking people to go vegan. You know, if they would see inside
the
glass house, inside the slaughterhouse. So obviously,
yes.
On one side, I think probably people need a moral compass. On the other side, people need to know about it in the first place. When you look at your pictures on the internet, I mean, obviously you have heard that so many times how beautiful you are, and so using your well, not necessarily your looks, but using obviously the fashion industry and all that kind of stuff. Is it a hindrance, or can it really help using looks for as an awareness raiser?
Well, it's worked for PETA, and they use celebrities all the time. Thanks for the compliment. I don't really think of myself as a poster girl for
you are.
Friends, but
thank you very
that's
much.
Very kind of you. I'm a photogenic person, but either way, I get a lot of help from editors and the like. Either way, it's worked in the West. Definitely trends catch on quickly here. I would love to see a celebrity such as Jackie Chan has done, or Animals Asia makes great use of their ambassadors, and I would very much like to see a Korean celebrity step up and say, I oppose this. I want you to listen to me, and I want you to follow what I'm saying, and at least give me a chance to convince you. That hasn't happened yet, but there have been people that have expressed interest. We haven't found our magical voice yet.
Mm.
And that would be great. And I would like it to be a Korean, because at the end of the day, this is Korea. This is the Korean people. This is their country, their culture. And it's the this animal goes way back in their history. Regarding the vegan argument, I tend to not, I stick to one issue at a time, although I do have a vegetarian corner on my website. But
yeah.
This argument is more complicated because there are simply so many facets. We have that argument, but we also have the fact that it's a threatened and endangered species, and it's an unregulated trade, and it can kill people. So while the vegan argument holds a lot more water, this one just has so many negatives attached to it that it's difficult to defend it, other than the farmers simply saying, look, we're in a crappy position. We spent a lot of money. You guys marketed it to us. Now what? That's really the only argument that I see that holds up, because at one point in time, it may very well have been useful in traditional medicine. It just isn't what it was, and there's no need for it anymore.
Yeah, so because when you look at it, this is the 21st century, and I think, you know, it's good that people call a spade a spade. and obviously,
right.
You know, the species is endangered, and
yeah.
and even when people don't know what a moon bear is, it's fair enough to say obviously that the bear as such, it's tragic when people obviously, you know, look at the teddy bear and everybody.
You know, I've thought about going to distributors and saying, you know, you've got teddy bear companies, and asking them to maybe create a moon bear, you know, something that I almost never see it done. Once in a blue moon, like at Bear Tree Park, although when I visited Bear Tree Park, I don't know if you're familiar with my report, I was mortified and delighted at the same time, because here's this beautiful property that has all the potential in the world to be something good, and yet is failing miserably in the name of commercialism, and they never responded to any of my inquiries. But I could see through my analytics that they checked out my website. And I feel like these are people that they're the former bear belt farmers. They had vision. They have an interest in this species. They have animals. They have so much potential to do good, and they're just not interested. And that's a real shame, and shame on them. I mean, I guess I'm at a point where that's how I feel, because I got in touch with, I know that we made a connection through a third party, and, you know, they have bear merchandise. They have children coming in for workshops. They have the ability to do great, great things in this beautiful property. And I really wish I could speak with them and understand, well, why not? Why not do it right? Why not do something good with this wonderful opportunity that you have? But I haven't been able to make that connection, and it's not for lack of trying.
Yeah,
and I speak on behalf of three large bodies that have tried.
The interesting thing is, obviously, you know, I mean, a lot of people always say, you know, God loves the trier and all that kind of stuff. And so it becomes sort of the idea, obviously, that people come back to you and say, you know, on the one hand side, obviously, when people say, you animal people. So again, it becomes this, you know, I mean, they say this to me all the time, you know, you animal people. And obviously there's a big disconnection, you know.
You know what? Labels are really unnecessary. I mean, one label I actually don't even like, and yet I use it all the time for the sake of convenience, is activist, because I don't think that the label is necessary. You simply live a responsible life in keeping with your ethics, and there's no need to go out of your way to call yourself an activist, because in theory, we're all practicing what we believe in. It's just some issues require more action than others, but I don't need to be labeled as a soldier of any sort when I'm simply saying, yeah, I don't agree with that. And I think you should know why. You know, I know plenty of, for example, you know, if I were to think that abuse of children is bad, and I were to see it happening regularly, I'd go out of my way to stop it. It wouldn't make me a labeled soldier of any sort. It would make me somebody upholding my beliefs.
Well, it's a bit of a problem in the sense that, you know, we were talking about celebrities, and obviously, you know, even though you were saying, obviously, it works for Peter, it is a big pity in a way that it always needs some sort of a celebrity angle before
anything
happens for the better.
I don't know if it needs a celebrity angle before anything happens. I think it needs to make sense for an economy, although it's certainly helpful when a celebrity can educate people because people pay attention to what Paris Hilton is wearing and people pay attention to, you know, Britney Spears. That's one way to get a lot of people's attention. It's just media. But no, I think that people generally are good. And education is just something that we have to struggle to spread. It's a shame that it would take, if it really takes a superstar to share the issue, then if that's what it takes, then I guess that's the nature of today's media climate. But it would be nice if we had an ambassador with that kind of power. Yeah, that would be great.
Absolutely.
It would be nicer if people felt that the issue itself warranted effort. And warranted opposition, because there it's not something that you can wait 10 years and expect to find the same. I mean, the same situation won't exist in 10 years. There may not be the species in 10 years, or the chance may be lost. But I'm very proud of groups like Green Korea, WISPA, you know, Animals Asia. These are people that have done everything that they could do. They may not all approach it the same way, but they're being proactive and they're doing what they can at the moment.
And I think it's also important, you know, to highlight that every individual can make a difference. You were just saying that, obviously, with your intern not knowing what's you've been using all along. So obviously, education is the key.
Yeah, and one person that's done a really good job of educating youth is John Walker. That was his take on it. He's like, you know, we don't have to necessarily go out into the streets and hold signs. We can begin by educating children. So we started writing children's books. One of them is on my website. It's called Ura's World. It can be found in major Korean bookstores and at Bookazine in Hong Kong. And it can be ordered online. And it's gorgeously illustrated. And it simply aims to introduce children to animals that they may or may not be seeing in 5 years. Or 10 years or 20 years. And it doesn't talk about bareback farming. And it's not like a sledgehammer kind of hit you over the head sort of book. It's a gentle introduction into, you know, our relationship with animals. And it helps kids feel like animals are their friends and know that they exist. And that's another approach that's valid and terrific. You can also find a children's lesson plan under the resources page on my website, which was donated to me by a lovely lady named Nick Goddard, made a beautiful lesson plan. So that's another thing that teachers, particularly in Asia, because there are a lot of English teachers, can do. They can help children know these animals exist, don't hurt them, don't use products that hurt them. So children's youth are tomorrow's politicians. We like to think of it that way, too.
Again, everything becomes a slogan these days, but yeah, I think you really have to get people when they're young.
Well, that's where people start forming their schemas, I suppose. You also, when they make you give them the opportunity to change with further information as technology evolves. And now that we have it, change is required and change is moral. But again, there are always going to be different opinions. This just happens to be mine and that of my organization. So we're hoping that we see change soon enough before we see the kind of damage that we're fearing, yeah. I guess.
Because, I mean, you know, there's no two ways about it. We have to keep at it.
Yes, and we do. It's just frustrating when you get a story or you call up, like I sent a press release from Animals Asia today to a major Korean newspaper, and I already know that it's just not news, unfortunately. And I still haven't made it into the Korean news. You know, it would be great. I've been on the radio several times. I've gotten into Chinese, Vietnamese media. But in Korea, it's very difficult for this particular issue to make headlines because it's a different culture. And I'm not trying to be critical of the way Koreans view nature because that's not really my point. I just feel like in a country where North Korea is just over the DMZ and there's plenty going on, it's difficult to get people's attention. But yeah, most people have no idea. They are not out to abuse animals. They're not heartless. They just don't know, in my experience.
Yeah.
Some do, and some just see animals as ours to use, and that's their opinion. I happen to disagree. It doesn't mean that I think these are horrible human beings. That's simply their opinion. I just would like to educate them about their options and to let them know that it's unsafe, unnecessary, and it could kill off a species in Korea that has plenty of historical value, and this species is suffering under horrible conditions.
I think that the other thing is obviously that, you know, you were talking about you know, the teaching and using books and you know, getting people when they're young. In many ways, obviously, you know, obviously, to a certain extent, you will always be viewed as a foreigner in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Just the same way.
I like to think of myself as a Canadian, yeah. Canadian Asian. I'm actually from Canada, but yeah, of course, sure, and that can work for or against me. It's been both, because often people are surprised that a foreigner is taking this degree of interest in their environmental issues. So yeah, that has worked for and it has worked against me.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I always get that, you know, because I obviously, being from Germany and living in Ireland for over 10 years and doing this animal rights show here, it's a bit like your story, you know, obviously. But the funny thing really is that obviously speciesism and racism is all the same thing. Because obviously when people talk about, you know, sort of, you know, you were saying obviously that people are surprised that you be a foreigner and you take so much, you have so much interest in nature, and then people say if it is a Korean problem, you know, what's it to you?
I think it's often the reaction is positive. They're touched that I would take interest in their environmental well-being, and surprised. And often my work is surprising because they've never heard of it, and then they wonder, well, what made you choose this? And what is this all about? Unfortunately, my website is predominantly in English. There's a translator on some PCs, but not all, attached to the WordPress option that I happen to use, but it doesn't always work. Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I don't meet a lot of people that say to me, you know, it's none of your business. But then again, that does happen. I find that many governments are sensitive to other cultures telling them the right way to live. And I can understand that.
Mm. Even though that's not what you're trying to do.
No, I'm trying to provide education, and I'm trying to provide facts and options so that people know that they exist. And I express a concern for the animal, and I do outright oppose what's happening. I mean, there's no ifs or buts about that, certainly. I disagree with the government 10,000,000%, but it doesn't change the fact that I also respect people having a choice. I just want to make sure that they understand their choices, because in my mind, my argument makes so much sense that I feel like if you're educated, you're going to agree. And if you don't care, that's different. But at the same time, if you do care about the environment, it makes all the sense in the world to agree with what we're saying, that there's a problem. The government has a problem. They've acknowledged they have a problem. The species is dying out. It's very clear cut to me, whether I'm foreign or Korean. And, you know, language barriers come into play, of course. But it's definitely on known to the government. It's definitely an issue. And it's wonderful that the exhibition that just took place was successful. It's a very encouraging, positive thing. So the more dialogue that ensues, the happier we are. The dialogue between Vietnam and Korea last year was also encouraging, or it might have been January. I've kind of lost track of time. But a National Assembly member in Vietnam had written our government, and some dialogue was exchanged, which is encouraging, because whenever you have politicians speaking, you know that issues are being talked about and solutions are being approached, and that's great. I mean, these are the people that make our laws. And Korea has a pickle, I will say. They do. But they also have a lot of people expressing interest in helping them solve it. And quite a bit of it is about money. Less about morals, more about money.
Mm. Yeah, the whole money thing is unfortunately, is always something that needs to be talked about.
That and what makes the most sense. I mean, some people might say, well, you've got 1,600 sick bears. Perhaps you should just humanely euthanize them and ban all bear farming for good. Your problem is solved. It'll never happen again, and there's no more suffering bears. It just had to be done. That's a very harsh but pragmatic approach. It's not my personal choice for a solution, but it's one. I know that there are some people that might think that that makes sense. It's been done. Some people believe that a phase out similar to what went on in Vietnam might make sense, which is like a gradual sort of deadline with restrictions and bans. Some compensation for farmers. I mean, I would rather see them retrained or given options myself, but I'm not an expert in economics. In fact, I'm not an expert in very much. I'm just someone who's taken upon themselves to educate themselves in an issue that they care about, which is pretty easy to do with all the information available and the fact that I live here and I can see what goes on, at least from a citizen's point of view or an expat's point of view. But yes, money is what it comes down to. It would take a very small percentage of, I believe it was John Walker who had made the point that would take a very small percentage of the Federal Reserve to solve this problem or to create a sanctuary. So when money is brought up, he's an investment banker. This is his area of expertise. But this is one of his points, is that the government really can't afford to do this. It's about prioritizing it. So I guess, I mean, there are human issues as well. And yes, money's a problem. But I think if we start with education, we will get somewhere.
So thank you so much for talking to me.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you for the work you do. I appreciate everything that you do to raise awareness about animals, and it doesn't go unnoticed. Thank you for your contribution. It's wonderful.
Thanks. Talk soon. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.